In the first half, you'll hear music from their 1976, classic 1976 album, The Book of Invasions, A Celtic Symphony, which uses the tales of the ancient tribes, the ancient tribe of the Tuatha Dé Danann, as its inspiration. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever in the world you're listening to us tonight, please welcome on vocals and bass, Barry Devlin, Jim Lockhart, flute, whistle, Hammond and keyboard, Charles O'Connor, vocals, fiddle, mandolin and concertina, Johnny Fain with guest drummer Paul McAteer, the legendary Horselips!
Your age, but then we thought maybe that isn't a good idea. We lacked our age, and you guys can be young.
Too late.
We're gonna do a chunk of the town right through from Gindown, so we won't be talking to you between now, and we'll be howling at you. But so up to the intermission. It's not the time. It's the Book of Invasions, we look forward to a competent audience.
Happy Patrick's Day. Are you all drunk? Anyone drunk? You're not drunk. You haven't had a drink, mate. The soberest looking crowd I've ever seen. We'll do something about that.
I was going to say, is there anybody here from Wales? St. Patrick was, but that's a minor detail.
Sure, the boy is about to be green.
star riders are heard. See them bumping and grinding, they're back on the wheels of the world. We can see the dawn a coming, he's got the flash of his spear. All the day we come, the dawn will bring. We'll be right back.
find him hard to recognize, cause he won't dress in black. He wears the suit of gold with bay, with velvet front and back. He can touch your trembling heart, can touch your very soul. Take you with him when he leaves, make your dreams turn old. To recognize, cause he won't dress in black. He wears a suit of gold and may with velvet front and back. But he can touch your trembling heart, can touch your very soul. Take it with him when he leaves, make your dreams turn old. Some people say that he's a fiend, a devil in disguise. He promised love and happiness, bright lights before your eyes. And still you know you can't refuse, no matter what you think. Just have to taste the glamour, ovations as you sing.
Thank you.
Listening so intently and for clapping along at the end. It was brilliant. I really enjoyed it so far. So there's a second half to come.
Cheers. Any questions? No questions. Good, thanks.
With music from the classic 90, they're in tonight, aren't they? With music from the classic 1973 album, The Town. Please welcome back Barry Devlin, Jim Lockhart, Johnny Fain, Charles O'Connor, guest drummer Paul McAteer, ladies and gentlemen, Horselips!
So you don't have any questions, no? Nothing. Everything's clear. You're happy.
We did a chunk of As You Spotted, the Book of Invasions, and this is a run through a big long piece of The Town. I hope you've all gone to the toilet because this goes on for hours and hours and hours and hours.
They're still going.
But there is a fine if you do go to the toilet. And we will be asking questions later.
And the other thing is we do want to say a big thank you to the... Before we get fired out by them, to the band, who have been... the orchestra have been fantastically forgiven for the last 2 days.
The real musician is Hank.
And to Brian Byrne, we'll be thanking him again. But Charles O'Connell was pointing out that it's incredibly worrying when you're playing the fiddle out front and there are 26 fellas who play the fiddle watching your back. But you think of me with the bass players. You know.
they cut him deep in a war between the sheets. So when he brought his bull to her, man a woman making war beyond the eiderdown.
Bitch.
spider, I come creeping back. I'm gonna spin my web all over you.
soon be gone. Moving on and all alone. High on a mountain stands a boat. Well, I may got the real boat. Can't see the fire, but we smell the smoke. Who'll take the plow? Will be the yoke. Trouble, trouble. I try to chase trouble, but it chases me.
So much better one.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Horselips.
Thank you. Great crowd. You're a great crowd. Thank you very much.
And once again, give it up for the Ulster Orchestra under Brian Byrne. An orchestra so precious, ladies and gentlemen, they only play behind Perspex. Barry Devlin, I'm not a music critic, but I'd say that went fairly well.
Yeah, no, it's only kind of starting, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a bit more to come. But yeah, it was brilliant. Really enjoyed it.
I have to say, Charles, there were moments there when I thought, I'd love to be listening to this on a beautiful summer's day in a big outdoor venue with the Ulster Orchestra and yourselves, the sun beating down on a picnic and...
Yeah. Donegal, perhaps, yeah.
Bundoran, maybe.
Bundoran. Whoa. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we'll do it, yeah. Yeah, we'll do it, yeah.
You're going to give us another couple of tunes, I think.
We're going to try, yeah. Any requests? Any questions?
We'll let you get on. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take another couple of tunes from Horselips.
Busy climbing the family tree. Oh, the times I've tasted. Came late, should have come when they called. Can't run with your back to the wall. Oh, the lines I've tasted. Now lost at sea, I'm free at last. In the night, my dreams all passed. I wish those golden fantasies could last at last. Cause I thought I knew the signs pointing my way home. Didn't think the time would ever come when I'd drift the sea alone, searching for a man to see. I'm drowning, restless kidding. 9 days on a ship in the sea, heard the calling, calling for me.
Thank think that one was gargled. It's a bit quiet for an encore, but it gives you a chance to hear how brilliant the arrangements are and how well the orchestra are playing them. And this one also is one that gives a bit of scope to that.
very much. Thank you.
Listen, you know, it's going to sound a bit corny, but it's really true. The people are standing up. Give yourselves a good clap. I know you're all in a lot of trouble getting the tickets right here. And I know a lot of backhanded stuff went off to get in some cases. Thank you so much. Osmond Dottis, scariest Dottis in the world. Thank you.
We should also say a big shout out, because this is obviously going out on radio, but it's also going out on the web. And there are people listening in all sorts of parts of the world. There's people listening in New York and San Francisco and Boston. And
yeah, let's have a round of applause for them. You missed it, you poo.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, wherever you are.
Happy Paddy's Day.
Song that has come back into the canon by what best we describe as popular request. It's the only Horslip song that's ever had a petition signed in favour of getting it back into the set. So, and it's kind of long and nice, and it gives Johnny a chance to stretch out. But before we do it, just to say, Declan McGovern, Mary Clare, the people who dreamed us up and ran with it, thank you so much.
Thank you.
To Brian, to the fantastic orchestra, to all the crew, to our crew. We could go on thanking people forever, but I have to stop it. Thank you.
Thank you.
us on BBC Radio Wales. You listen to the St Patrick's Day concert coming to you live from the Waterfront Hall in Belfast, and backstage the Ulster Orchestra is about to go on stage for the next part of the concert, which is going to feature themselves and Horselips. I'm delighted to say the band are here. They're all here. Here we have Charles O'Connor, we have Jim Lockhart with Barry Devlin, we have conductor Brian Byrne, and Johnny Feen is there as well. Jim Lockhart, this is, I have to say, first of all, you're very welcome.
I thought you were going to say how nice we looked.
Yes. The second thing I was going to say was, I can't believe how well you look. And I just wanted to check. Nobody has painted their hands silver. There's no extraneous jewellery or any of that sort of nonsense. Anyway, this is very, you're all looking very sober and suited tonight.
Yeah, we're certainly suited. I'm wearing the wedding jacket. If anyone is interested in having a look, a nice piece of fustian with a light pinstripe, lightly dressed with a salad dressing and mayonnaise. Sorry, I've gone mad temporarily. I've taken a leave of my senses.
We'd be chilling, bro.
This is a first in the long history of Horselips. This kind of concert with the Symphony Orchestra is a first for you.
I know we played with the LA Philharmonic. No, we didn't. I'm lying. We've never played with anyone like that before. We might have played with a couple of girls in Kerry once, but that was a different story. No, we haven't, and this is great, and it's wonderful. What a nice experience.
And I have to say thank you for giving me the opportunity as a Horselips fan to sing Jarrah Doom with Horselips in the Waterfront Hall.
That would be great.
Well, no, I've done
you
it
do
already.
Know the words,
that was at rehearsals.
Oh, really?
I was in row F, seat 10.
I thought we were out of tune.
That was me.
To be honest, John,
the children in 10 years' time, the children will never know that it was during rehearsals. It was, as far as I'm concerned, I've sung Jarrah Doom with Horselips and the Ulster Orchestra in the Waterfront Hall.
And we'll support your story.
How does it feel, then? How does it feel when you're playing the stuff that you play with a symphony orchestra behind you? Does it feel any different?
Terrifying. I mean, there are all these guys who are really good musicians back there looking at your back. You know, fortunately, in my case, they're not looking at my hands. But no, it's brilliant. The Ulster Orchestra have been fantastic. It's wonderful to play with guys who don't mind the fact that you started this song twice as fast as you started it the last time you played it. Just go, yeah, that's the speed they're playing it.
What's actually extraordinary about it is that Brian has, you know, the way our stuff was constructed always had kind of various layers, and there was always a sort of implied orchestral elements. You know, there was stuff that in some kind of idealized world in our heads was supposed to sound like brass, and something that was supposed to sound like strings, and something that was supposed to sound like horns and woodwind and stuff. And Brian has somehow magically picked up on all of that and then added a whole layer of subtlety and magic of his own.
But that's the thing, the kind of music that you did lends itself very well to being orchestrated.
Very much so, yeah. What a pleasure to hear it actually in reality happening, you know. It's great. It's odd, because it hasn't happened before, like you say, but it's lovely. It's great. They were asking me, was I nervous? Yes. I said, no, don't be stupid. Yes, I'm nervous.
But there is a difference, because there's an understanding between a band. You know, you can't just go off, Johnny, and do a big, you know, can't just extend your solo and do another kind of 16 bars, and because there are people behind you who are reading music.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the sort of freedom. The extended solos, I'm afraid, has been a bit curtailed, but I mean, it's still a great experience. Oh. Absolutely, yeah. Much to the boys, the delight.
We around and paid Johnny not to play the long solo. The thing we should do is to thank Declan McGovern for dreaming this up. You know, I came up here to a Paul Brady concert and I was amazed by how good the Ulster Orchestra were, and Declan went, "Why don't you do it?" So miraculously, there it was. He started up. Marie Claire has followed it up. The BBC have been fantastic. I'm only saying this because I hope they'll pay us at the end of the night. No, they have been. It's been a pleasure. It's been, you know, something like this isn't necessarily always going to be fun. It can be hard work. It's been fun from start to finish. It's really been good.
Well, the orchestra is tuned, and on stage, there've been people who've sold their grannies for tickets for this gig tonight outside. Good luck,
granny. Funny did you? Enough. Yeah, I got her out in the car.
Well, listen, good luck to you all.
Thank you.
And I'll go out and get this show on the road.
Thanks a lot, John.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, a round of applause for someone who set the scene so beautifully for us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Casey. And also, we could ask a round of applause for the Ulster Orchestra leader, Tomáš Kocsis, and tonight's conductor and arranger, Brian Byrne. Now, I've been a proud Horselips fan for 28 years. Now, Horselips fans here tonight will be doing their sums and be thinking, so I became a Horselips fan about 4 years after they split up, which is true, and it was unfortunate timing, but there you go. So I had to wait until 2009 on the Odyssey Arena in Belfast to first hear live these songs that I loved as I grew up. And since it was first mentioned last year that this concert was happening with Horselips and the Ulster Orchestra, I have to say I've been inordinately excited and I'm very proud to be here tonight. Because this is a band who between 1970 and 1980 created a template for how to fuse traditional music and rock music. They tapped into a great tradition of legend and song which exists in Ireland, and still now their music always reminds us and should remind us of the uniqueness of what we have. And for some unknown reason, it also seems to give 50-year-old men a license to get up and pogo about. Now, we've spoken about this already tonight, and I'm watching you. What a first half. That was, if you're just joining us, you're listening to BBC Radio Ulster, live from the Waterfront Hall in our St. Patrick's Day concert, where Horselips have just played the first half of their set with the Ulster Orchestra. So you had Jim Lockhart on flutes and various whistles and keyboards. You had Barry Devlin on bass and vocals. You had Charles O'Connor on fiddle, concertina, mandolin and vocals. You had Johnny Feen on guitar and vocals. And their guest drummer, Paul McAteer, taking us through a set made up of music from their 1976 album, The Book of Invasions. Well, that's the end of the first half of our St. Patrick's Day concert. Horselips are just leaving the stage now, live at the Waterfront Hall in Belfast. They'll be back in about 20 minutes. Now, as the audience here files out for a breath of fresh air and to kind of gather themselves after that first half, there's an interval treat for listeners to BBC Radio Ulster. Last year, as part of the Legends of Irish Music series, I had the great pleasure of spending a day with Horselips bass player and singer Barry Devlin and flautist and keyboard player Jim Lockhart, and got the chance to ask all the questions I ever wanted to know about Horselips. In the early 1970s, a band of musicians like no other hit the Irish music scene. They were called Horselips. With their distinctive blend of Irish traditional music and rock, they heralded a new, unique sound with an energy and attitude that sums up the decade in one sound. Jim Lockhart from Dublin, Eamon Carr from Kells, County Meath, Charles O'Connor from Middlesbrough, Johnny Feen from Limerick, and Barry Devlin from Arbow in County Tyrone. Taking their name from the four horsemen of the apocalypse from the Book of Revelations, they came up with the title Horselips. Barry Devlin describes how a group of young friends working on a beer advertisement in Dublin became real-life rock stars.
Charles and Eamon and myself were asked if we'd pretend to be a rock band. And because we knew how to hold instruments, we went, yeah, I would love to. And we needed a keyboard player. And Jim Lockhart was at UCD, and Eamon was about to get another keyboard player whose name I can't divulge. And I went, I know this guy. And they said, well, how quick can you get him? And I went, oh, I'll get him now. He's probably just crossing Stephen's Green. And I ran down Harcourt Street. And Jim was, bizarrely, and if you wanted an omen, Jim was crossing Stephen's Green. And I went, you want to be in a band? And he went, yeah. And we went up and we played to a backing track. We mimed to a backing track. But we got to wear, like, red jackets, like the Kinks had, and cravats. And the room was full of noise and girls and free beer. And we thought, this is probably what it's going to be like for the rest of our lives if we do this.
Mm-hmm.
After getting a taste for the high life, the young band got an early break when a producer at the state broadcaster RTE asked them to provide 6 weeks' worth of music for a new Irish language series. But it wasn't going to be a straightforward process, as Barry and then Jim Lockhart explain.
The only problem was we didn't have 6 weeks' worth of music, so what we did is we'd come in on a Monday to Jim's house and start writing a piece and try and learn it by Friday and then do it on Saturday.
Plus which we didn't have the instruments to play them on, so when we got paid for the first week, we managed to buy instruments for week three. I remember at one stage we actually had a guitar that cost 50p, which almost took the life of young Devlin at one stage.
The equipment we used was absolutely dreadful. We used to hire it. And because we weren't a proper band, the guy who hired it to us on Collins Avenue used to give us terrible, terrible equipment. It was always shorting and farting and sparking.
So what stage then did you say, right, you know, this is working, we've got something here, and take it and road test it in front of people?
We built up and we did a few more gigs, and we somehow got playing on a festival in the RDS that had the guy with the fire on his head. What do you call him?
We played a festival which was run by a company called Headland Promotions. Get it, Headland Promotions. And this is at the end of 1971. The Crazy World of Arthur Brown was the second headline, and the headline was actually Georgie Fame and Alan Price. It was a weird festival. I remember it so well. Arthur Brown had bought a job lot of props from a theatre that had closed down in Wakefield, and he had written the songs around the props that he'd got. So during one of the songs, he was ferried across the stage in a theatrical ship with waves on rollers. And in another song, he appeared in a giant syringe and sang a song about the evils of drugs. But against such
force of world time, really.
Where is he now?
So against such world class opposition, we did well. We actually stormed the festival with our heady mix of stuff we could do and stuff we couldn't really do. But everyone remembered us at the end of it. And the person who particularly remembered us at the end of it was Michael Deeney, who had put on the show with Paul McGuinness. They were the joint promoters. And Deeney, we'd been looking for a magic person to spirit us out of our sort of sloth and indolence and actually put us on the road. And Michael went, "You guys, I really think you're very interesting. Would you like me to manage you?" And we went, "No, we were thinking of somebody much more famous and important." But he talked us into being managed by him. So by October 1971, Michael was managing us.
And so with their new manager, the ambitious young bunch set about recording their first album, Happy to Meet, Sorry to Part, in 1972.
Yeah, that went really well. We had great fun doing it. We couldn't figure out where we were going to record it. And that was where Deeney's fearlessness kind of came in, because there wasn't a multi-track studio. There was kind of the recording studios, but they were a bit nascent in Ireland at the time. So he said we should bring in the Rolling Stones mobile, and he sourced a big house in Tipperary to put the stuff into. Because we knew so little about how a band worked or anything like that, we didn't know what it was that we couldn't do. So we were kind of a bit fearless as well, because we didn't know what kind of animals lurked around the corners. And so we did what, in retrospect, when I listened back to it a few years ago when we were remastering it after a long period in the doldrums, I was kind of taken aback by the audacity of it and the stuff that we had actually attempted to do, some of which worked and some of which was kind of bit on the edge. But it was great fun, and it was so unlike anything else that people really did take it to their hearts pretty much, and it was a runaway success and sold very well that Christmas. And yeah, good fun. The best and oldest furniture cannot be rearranged. We had kind of ways of working which involved taking a traditional tune and turning it into a riff, or taking a traditional tune and rocking it up and melding it with another song.
But that's something in the second album, in the Town album, which in itself, you know, not every band could get away with an album based on the mythology around the cattle raid of Cooley. And from that album came arguably your most successful song. And again, it was that idea of a riff, the old O'Neill's March, turned into a rock song.
Sharon Doom is almost a template for what a Horselip song is supposed to be, which is to take a really well-known traditional Irish motif and do something different with it. That is a lyrical content superimposed on a, it's a thing in two lines. The Jarrig is red and Doom is just Doom. But the lyric emerged from Eamon's obsession with Marvel comics. Jarrig Doom was his version of Cú Chulainn as a Stan Lee hero.
And it has, Jarrig Doom has gone on and has been used by other, I mean, most famously in the World Cup campaign 1990.
Larry Mullen put together a few elements and built it into that anthem, which was great. It's great fun. I love that.
We've qualified for the World Cup. Go and compete.
They recreated it so perfectly. Like, a lot of people reckon that it's a sample. It's not, actually. They had Anto Drennan come in and do the guitar, and Davy Spillane did the pipes on it.
But in the mid-70s, there was no question as to who Horselips were. One of the busiest touring groups of their day, there wasn't a dance hall in Ireland where they hadn't played. Album number 3, Dancehall Sweethearts, came out in 1974, and one of the big hits off the album was King of the Fairies.
King of the Fairies is an interesting one because the drive in that, I lifted from Nazareth, This Flight Tonight, which goes, ding, 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 look out the, da-da. Because we toured with Nazareth, and that was the first time we realised we're a rock band. You know, I bought myself a fur coat and a silver bracelet and all sorts because the lads were covered in bling. They were great. I loved the drive of This Flight Tonight as they played it. And one night on stage we were going, you know, you could probably put that underneath an Irish tune. And I think you went, King of the Fairies would be the obvious one, because it's got such a simple...
It's two chords, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. Yeah. And that was the trick.
And as the band went on, and with the later albums, Aliens and The Man Who Built America, was there a sense there that you were moving away from the Irish stuff and moving more towards...
Oddly enough, there's loads of Irish stuff still in there. We actually hung on to it. There's bucket loads.
Man Who Built America, funny enough, this is an interesting statistic. Man Who Built America has more... the phrase we used, Irish tunes concealed about their persons in the tunes. Man Who Built America has more of those than Aliens has, and the same as Book of Invasions has. It's just in a different... We were playing more like a rock band, but the tunes are still in there.
See him driving those golden nails that hold together the silver bars. That one day gonna take us to the stars, 'cause he's the man who built America.
But it had elements, you know, it had elements of that high guitar, that kind of sweet guitar, that, and it was less spiky. And I think it probably lost some of its interest.
But as the decade progressed, the challenges of pleasing audiences and record companies proved difficult. They had lost their deal with RCA Records in the mid-70s, and, as Jim Lockhart explains, that wasn't the only thing.
We had kind of lost our way creatively as well after The Unfortunate Cup of Tea, which generally would be seen, I think, among the band as not being our highest point. There was another catalyst to that, which was that for the end of the 70s, the musical landscape had shifted around us and the ground was shifting under our feet because punk had taken over, and the kind of thing that we were intimately engaged with and involved with, which was like that concept album and the whole kind of slightly over-intellectualised approach to rock and roll, became suddenly very, very in for a dig. And it just got to the point where there was, OK, let's knock it on the head.
We were potato farmers in a world which had turned to aubergine. It was 10 years. We turned professional on St. Patrick's Day in 1972, as I mentioned earlier, and we didn't stop at all till October 1980.
I mean, 'tis wore out we were.
I have to say I loved touring, but even I had to admit that by October 1980, we were a bit shook. And The Man Who Built America, bizarrely, or depending on your view, was our best-selling album of all of them, and looked... all the signs were that our next album would crack America. And we did Short Stories and Tall Tales, which is a very different album from The Man Who Built America, and which the record company absolutely loathed and let us know that they loathed it. And so we were kind of looking at, OK, we have to... this album is not going to happen for us, you know. And so for at least 2 more years, we're going to be playing to diminishing numbers of the same faces before we hopefully hit another album, but we're not sure where that album will come from. And we kind of went, there's probably a part two in our lives. And in Belfast, on I think October the 13th or 14th, 1980, we did our last gig.
People still talk about that gig. People that were there, it's like the Dandelion Market. But what do you remember about that Ulster Hall gig?
Being very sad. I mean, genuinely being very sad.
Yeah, my dad had only died very shortly before that.
Yeah.
So it was like I picked the wrong month to give up smoking, you know.
But we didn't announce it. I mean, we didn't say it was the last gig or anything like that. The only thing we played, we finished up with the last time. This could be the last time.
I hadn't realised the desolation of it, you know. Because it was totally the end of a big chunk of our lives, a serious chunk of our lives.
And did you shake hands and say, right, guys, all
right? Yeah, we did. We said, see you in the next life. Oh, absolutely. When bands break up, anybody will tell you, even ours is a relatively amicable breakup, but your life does pitch and toss for quite a long time afterwards in a way that you don't realise. And things that you don't realise, it was only years afterwards, I'd written a song called Rescue Me, which was ostensibly about the Vietnamese boat people, and there was a kind of a parallel there between yet another bunch of people being driven out from a country they didn't want to leave. But it was only years after I realised it was about myself. You know, you never start a band to be mildly successful. You start a band to be the Horselips. Conquer the world.
Yeah, what else would you be
those Horselips, you know, the ones that everyone remembers after. Or indeed to be the Beatles, if that's how you pitch it. And wherever you stop, you're only halfway up the mountain that you... No matter where, you know, I don't think there's probably two with most bands.
I cried out, no one listened to me. Busy climbing the family tree. Oh, the lines I've wasted.
Since then, the band has worked hard on remastering its back catalogue, but it took an exhibition of Horselips memorabilia in the Orchard Gallery in Derry in 2004 to get them to play together again. Jim Lockhart remembers their first rehearsal in 24 years.
We got together a week or two before in my front room, as we had way, way before, around a different piano in a different front room, and started knocking a few bits and pieces together. So I got out the flute and started playing the riff and Furniture. And on the second line, the guitar came in behind me. Johnny just sort of fell into place behind me, and the hairs literally rose in the back of my neck. It was such an extraordinary feeling.
Solid as a chair from an older time.
The O2 was a fantastic, and the Odyssey was a fantastic. There was something extraordinary about it in that, because of 30 years, and yet it was like you'd walked out again the night after Belfast, and yet everyone like you had suddenly become 30 years older. You know, I there were extraordinary concerts. I mean, aside from, I think if we'd stood up there and scratched our bums, it probably would have been just fine anyway. Because there was an element of people going, I haven't seen you, not us, I mean the people beside them, since, for 30 years. I saw you in Bundoran or whatever. So there was a degree of that. There was a degree of the gathering thing. And there was a kind of...
Well, I'd never seen the band live. Personally, I'd never seen the band live, although I grew up listening to the music. So for me, it was the first time that I'd seen you all on stage. It was none of that sense of looking at something from a previous era. It looked, it felt right. The music was great. What you chose to play on the night, it was a continuation of something that had kind of been a gap. Where the hell have you been for 30 years?
I got an email from a guy. A couple of guys came over from Weissenau near Nuremberg, where we used to play one of the regular gigs that we did in Germany. He said, I am very surprised when you come on stage that I find I have tears in my eyes. This is the first time this happens to me in a concert.
Watching people, because there was a woman beside me who was sitting in a fur coat, and beside her was a wee baldy man, and they sat very demurely the whole way through the thing, and as soon as trouble started, she got up and the coat came off and she was giving it absolutely loads. And it almost was like, you know, she'd waited 30 years with her fur coat on, was the wife of the, I don't know, chairman of the golf club or whatever it was. But she let rip.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
I mean, I saw you at one stage play. You were playing the flute with one hand and two different keyboards with the other hand.
Yeah.
I used to see that in the old Grey Whistle Test, but I didn't think anybody could actually do it.
That's what it's like. I mean, we were a band that rocked out, and yet there was always something interesting about what we used to do. And a lot of people who would have brought along maybe sons or daughters or somebody who was unconvinced, and they were able to turn around and go, "No, didn't I tell you?" And people would go, "Yeah." You know, that's a brilliant thing to have happen.
Well, listen, it's a pleasure to
thank you, John.
Actually sit down and take up your whole afternoon, evening, and along into the night. But I've really enjoyed it. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
You're very welcome back, and wherever you are tonight, a happy St. Patrick's Day to you. You join us live in the Waterfront Hall in Belfast for our St. Patrick's Day concert, which brings together the legendary Celtic rockers Horselips with the Ulster Orchestra, led by Tamás Kocsis, and conducted tonight by the multi-talented Brian Byrne, who also did the arrangements. And for the second half, we're straight back into Irish mythology again. This time, it's not the evil eye of Balor or the silver arm of the king of the Tuatha-Dé Danann. This time it's simply an interprovincial spat between Ulster and Connacht over a woman and a cow.